Good morning and welcome to Simply Finance. It's Sunday, April 7th. On today's show, Bajaj Housing Finance selects five investment banks as advisors for their proposed IPO, and House Finance adopts a draft operating budget with a $2,300 PFD. Plus, RBI imposes penalties on IDFC First Bank and Ellice Housing Finance for non-compliance. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Finance. We start off with a significant development in the finance sector. Bajaj Housing Finance is reportedly planning to launch an initial public offering, IPO, within the next 12 to 18 months, targeting a valuation of up to $10 billion. The company has selected five investment banks as advisors for this proposed IPO. Here to discuss this further is Abby, a correspondent for Simply Finance. Can you tell us more about this development?
Certainly, David. Bajaj Housing Finance has chosen Kotak Mahindra Capital, Axis Capital, BofA Securities, JM Financial, and SBI Capital as advisors for its proposed IPO. The deal has been initiated and work on the issue has started. However, it's not clear yet if more banks will be added at a later stage.
This move comes after it was first reported that the home financier was planning to launch an IPO. Can you tell us more about the timeline and the targeted valuation?
Yes, the company is planning to launch the IPO within the next 12 to 18 months. This move would also mark the return of the umbrella Bajaj Group to the public market. The targeted valuation is between $9 billion and $10 billion. The firm is planning to raise $900 million to $1 billion, keeping the minimum dilution and expected valuation range in mind.
And this planned IPO is in line with the Reserve Bank of India's compulsory requirement for certain non-banking financial companies, correct?
That's correct. The Reserve Bank of India has a requirement for upper-layer, non-banking financial companies to get listed on the stock exchanges within 3 years of being notified as an NBFC. Bajaj Housing Finance was declared as an upper-layer NBFC by the RBI on September 30, 2022. Therefore, it's mandated to be listed on or before September 30, 2025, as per the regulatory framework.
What steps are being taken by Bajaj Finance to fulfill these compulsory regulatory requirements?
Bajaj Finance has informed the Bombay Stock Exchange that its subsidiary is taking actions to fulfill the compulsory regulatory requirements. The Board of Directors will convene on April 24th to discuss strategies to comply with the mandatory listing requirement. They will discuss various options, taking into consideration the prevailing market conditions.
Thanks for the update, Abby. Now, shifting our focus to Alaska, the House Finance Committee there has passed its version of the proposed operating budget, which now heads to the House floor for debate before being passed on to the Senate. The over $11 billion proposal includes a roughly $2,300 permanent fund dividend, less than the $3,500 proposed by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Here to discuss this further is our correspondent, Michael. Can you tell us more about this budget and the permanent fund dividend?
Certainly, David. The permanent fund dividend, or PFD, is a payment made to Alaska residents from investment earnings of mineral royalties. The House Finance Committee's budget includes a PFD of about $2,300, which is lower than the $3,500 proposed by Governor Dunleavy. The committee argues that a $200 million surplus from higher oil prices in recent years, along with a projected $152 million surplus next budget year, makes this combined $2,272 PFD energy relief check possible. This, according to Finance Committee Co-Chair Delina Johnson, also leaves the state with a balanced budget.
What has been the response to this proposed PFD amount?
There have been mixed reactions. Some, like Rep. Neil Foster, have proposed amendments for a full statutory PFD, which were voted down. Others, like Rep. Elise Galvin and Rep. Sarah Hannon, proposed lesser PFD amounts, citing concerns that high PFD payouts could take funding away from vital state services like education. These proposals also failed. Rep. Julie Coulomb expressed mixed feelings, stating that while she would want a full PFD, achieving this would require cutting the operating budget and having a fiscal plan.
What are some of the notable cuts and additions in this budget?
The budget includes cuts such as $1.5 million earmarked for the state's statehood defense program and $5 million requested by the governor for the Alyeska Reading Academy. On the other hand, $7.5 million was added for grants to child care centers, and $4 million was allocated to help fund year-round operations at an Anchorage homeless shelter. There's also one-time funding for a $680 increase to the per-student funding formula, known as the BSA.
What happens next with this budget?
Once the House passes its version of the budget, it will be sent to the Senate. Senate majority members have said they expect to see the House version of the budget by April 12th. It's worth noting that the clock is ticking on lawmakers after the governor vetoed the bipartisan $246 million education package, terming it a spending bill that didn't address improving educational outcomes.
Thanks for those insights, Michael. In other financial news, the Reserve Bank of India has imposed penalties on IDFC First Bank and LIC Housing Finance for violation of certain loan-related norms. The penalty on IDFC First Bank amounts to Rs. 1 crore, while LIC Housing Finance has been fined Rs. 49.70 lakh. Here to delve into the details is James, a correspondent for Simply Finance. Can you tell us more about the reasons behind these penalties?
Yes, David. The penalty on IDFC First Bank is due to non-compliance with certain directions on loans and advances, statutory and other restrictions. The bank had sanctioned term loans to a public sector undertaking for financing infrastructure projects without conducting due diligence on the viability and bankability of the projects. The bank failed to ensure that revenue streams from the projects were sufficient to take care of the debt servicing obligations. The repayment of the term loans was made out of budgetary resources.
And what about LIC Housing Finance? What led to the penalty on them?
LIC Housing Finance was penalized for not complying with certain provisions of the Fair Practices Code. The company did not disclose the rate of interest and approach for gradation of risk in loan application forms and sanction letters. It also charged a prepayment penalty on housing loans on a floating rate basis, which was pre-closed from any source, and a fixed rate basis, which was pre-closed from borrowers' own sources.
Are these penalties intended to pronounce upon the validity of any transaction or agreement entered into by these institutions with their customers?
No. These penalties are based on deficiencies in regulatory compliance and are not intended to pronounce upon the validity of any transaction or agreement entered into by them with their respective customers.
I see. And what about the cancellation of the certificate of registration of 4 NBFCs?
The RBI has indeed cancelled the certificate of registration of 4 non-banking financial companies, namely Kundal's Motor Finance, Nithya Finance, Bhatia Hire Purchase, and Jeevanjyoti Deposits and Advances. These companies can no longer transact the business of a non-banking financial institution. Additionally, 5 other NBFCs have voluntarily surrendered their certificates of registration.
Thanks for that report, James. In other financial news, the Irish Finance Minister, Michael McGrath, has announced a significant move. The Ireland Strategic Investment Fund, or ISIF, will divest from 6 Israeli companies due to their involvement in occupying Palestinian territory. Bella, a correspondent for Simply Finance, is here to discuss this further. Bella, can you tell us more about this decision and its implications?
Certainly, David. The National Treasury Management Agency, or NTMA, has confirmed this divestment from certain companies in the IF's global equity portfolio. The decision reportedly pertains to shareholdings worth $2.95 million, or about $3.2 million, in 6 companies. These include major banks such as Bank Hapoalim BM, Bank Leumi Israel BM, Israel Discount Bank, Mizrahi Tefahot Bank Ltd., First International Bank, and Rami Levy CN Stores.
What is the timeline for this divestment?
Minister McGrath has emphasized that the divestment will be executed as soon as possible in the coming weeks. He also mentioned that ISIF will continue to review the alignment of its investments within its investment parameters and commercial objectives.
This decision comes at a time when Israel is on trial before the International Court of Justice for genocide against Palestinians. Can you provide some context on this?
Yes. Israel has been waging a devastating war on Gaza. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, over 33,000 Palestinians have been killed, and more than 75,000 wounded in Israel's ongoing conflict in Gaza. The Israeli aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip. Israel, on the other hand, reports that 1,200 soldiers and civilians were killed during the Al-Aqsa flood operation on October 7th.
And how does this decision by Ireland fit into the larger international response to the situation in Palestine?
Last month, Ireland, along with Spain, Malta, and Slovenia, initiated steps toward recognizing the state of Palestine in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. This divestment can be seen as part of a broader shift in international sentiment and policy towards the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
We appreciate the insights from our Simply Finance reporter, Bella, and with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Finance. We'll see you back here tomorrow.